payback could prove difficult.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Welcome to the Morning Open, a look at what's driving the markets as we're just getting the trading day started. Let's ask the question, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now, pretty much flat for the moment. European shares are higher, and Asian stocks closed mostly lower today. The government watchdog group for the Troubled Asset Relief Program says we shouldn't count on much of a return when it comes to the auto bailout. GM and Chrysler were propped up by more than $80 billion in government funds. The Congressional Oversight Panel says there's no way the car company's share prices will rise to a point that's high enough to repay all of that. Bill Stone is chief investment strategist at PNC Wealth Management. He joins us live from Philadelphia this morning. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
So any surprise to you about that?
I don't think it should come as much of a surprise to many people. I think one is, I think we all know that car making is a really tough business, and, you know, both of those businesses got themselves into a rough spot. So, you get to a point, too, where if no one else on the private side will actually give you the money to restructure, et cetera, you got to wonder, you know, whether you really would get your money back. So, I don't think it's should be a huge surprise anyway.
And for their part, GM does say it can repay it down the road. So we found out this morning mortgage applications surged last week. Is this more than just about low interest rates?
I think it's a little bit of both. One is mortgage rates got down 30-year fixed down towards the 5% mark, which definitely set off a ton of refinancings. But we also had a nice spike in the amount of purchase mortgages. So, you know, I think it's just more good news on just the stabilization of the housing market and frankly, the start of the recovery in that area.
All right. Bill Stone joining us from Philadelphia this morning. Bill, thanks.
Thanks.
A stark warning today about the environmental impact of aviation. A panel of experts advising the British government on climate change says air travel will cause severe damage unless it's curbed. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The Climate Change Committee says if the aviation industry's carbon emissions continue to grow unchecked, they'll represent 20% of global emissions by the middle of the century. The committee says alternative technologies seem unlikely to solve the problem. Biofuels may not be the answer, and electric planes seem a distant dream. Committee Chairman David Kennedy says air travel will, over time, have to be restricted by international agreement.
And aviation at the moment is not playing its part globally. It should be part of a global agreement because aviation emissions are significant and damaging and could take us off track.
He wants the British government to press for a global deal to cap the aviation industry's carbon emissions at the UN summit in Copenhagen at the end of the year. His report is an embarrassing one for the British government. Environmental campaigners say his message contradicts the decision to allow a third runway at Heathrow Airport. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, September 9th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. International tourism is big business, but the United States hasn't been very competitive at that business since the 9/11 terror attacks. Government border checks and passenger screenings have made the U.S. a less attractive destination for international travelers. And today, the Senate is likely to approve a proposal to roll out the welcome mat. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports from Washington.
The bill would set up a nonprofit corporation that could spend as much as $100 million a year promoting international travel to the U.S. The money would come from a $10 fee charged to foreign tourists on a visa waiver program. Conservative critics say this is just another case of the government taking over work that should be done by the private sector. But the travel industry says government-imposed barriers at the border have hurt their business. They claim the extra tourism promotion would attract another 1.5 million visitors, with each one adding over $4,000 to the U.S. economy. The $10 cost to visitors is a lot lower than what other countries charge, according to the bill's sponsors. But the European Union is warning that some U.S. travelers to Europe could face retaliatory fees if Congress approves the program. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Today, OPEC meets, and the oil cartel is expected to leave production output alone. The Saudi oil minister said yesterday that the current price of oil, around $70 a barrel, is good for everybody, his words. But gas in some parts of the country is around $3 a gallon right now. So is the price, the current oil price, really good for everyone? Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
Not necessarily. Stephen Lieb is chief economist at Lieb Capital Management.
I would rephrase it and say the current price is bad for everybody, but a different price would probably be even worse.
Lieb says today's gas prices may be lower than last summer's, but they're still relatively high, especially in a down economy. But he says if oil producers were to increase production, causing the price of oil to fall,
that would be good temporarily for U.S. consumers. But longer term, it would be terrible, because longer term, it would mean very, very little, if any, additional oil will come on stream.
He says that's because when oil commands less than $70 a barrel, oil producers usually won't invest in drilling and exploration. That would lead to an oil shortage in years to come. Others say higher prices would be better for the environment because they'd spur the development of alternative energy sources. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The financial services firm WestRock is going far from its headquarters in New York for an owner. The firm is being acquired by an Indian tribe from South Dakota. And as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, it's said to be the first 100% Native American tribe to own a financial services company.
We are a small tribe located in central South Dakota. We have approximately 3,600 members at this time.
That's Michael Jandro, chairman of the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe. Until today, the tribe made its money selling popcorn, farming, and doing construction. Now it's entering a whole new world.
As far as coming to Wall Street, it's new, it's exciting.
And it's potentially very lucrative, because even though the firm will have the same regulatory oversight as any other broker-dealer, its tax status will be different. Tribes are not subject to federal income tax, and WestRock CEO Don Hunter says there are other advantages.
Public pension funds have to set aside anywhere between 7 and 30% of their assets to minority corporations. So to go in and raise money, you have tremendous advantages by walking in the door just being a minority. And in fact, Indians are, they go ahead of the other minority firms.
Professor Bruce Dutu teaches Native American studies at Dartmouth. He says the deal is the latest evidence of a growing trend.
Indian tribes are very well prepared and willing to enter into new markets and new activities that really stretch the bounds of their sovereignty and not being tied to agriculture and, more recently, casinos.
But Dutu says because of the unique legal circumstances involved, both sides should be careful dealing with each other. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the National Football League kicks off its 89th season. And this weekend, CBS marks 50 years of broadcasting professional football. Now, the NFL gets more than $3 billion a year from CBS and other networks for the rights to air those games. But given the drop in the number of people watching football, the NFL's TV cash cow may be a thing of the past. Adam Allington reports.
If you tick through a list of televised football firsts, CBS was often the network behind them, whether it was the first color broadcast, instant replay, or the Telestrator, that crazy TV pen John Madden used to illustrate his signature booms and blocks for so many years.
They know that any time that Montana's going to run, it's going to be out here to the right, so they're going to bring him right here to get in Montana's face.
Together with play-by-play announcer Pat Summerall, Madden worked for CBS during the 80s and 90s, when football's popularity on TV knew no bounds. CBS found out just how valuable the NFL was after they lost it to Fox for 3 years in the 1990s.
Typically speaking, sports properties tend to be loss leaders, but they help cross-promote the heck out of other programming.
Patrick Riech is an associate professor of economics at Webster University in St. Louis. He says oftentimes networks actually lose money on the games themselves, but make it back in the form of higher ad sales on other shows.
So the real question is, do we think the sports property is going to generate enough revenue and ad sales from all of our other programming, whose ratings will hopefully be higher because we're cross-promoting using sports as a platform to do that?
But television ratings for NFL games have been slipping over the past decade. And because of league rules, any game that's not sold out within 72 hours of kickoff can't be broadcast locally. Early estimates say as many as 12 teams may face blackouts during the upcoming season. But CBS Sports President Sean McManus told reporters earlier this month that he doesn't expect the blackouts to create too much pushback from advertisers.
I don't like it when I get an email on Thursday morning saying here are the stadiums that aren't sold out. But we've lived with them in the past, and hopefully when the economy gets better, we'll go back to as many sellouts as we used to have.
Blackouts aside, football is still the most popular sport in the U.S. with some of the highest ratings. And this season, the QB comebacks of Michael Vick and Brett Favre might add just the right amount of drama to keep fans tuning in. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
The Beatles Rock Band hits stores today. The video game allows players to sing while playing on instruments modeled after the ones the Fab Four had. The game was published by MTV, which paid a boatload of money and is hoping for a boatload in return. Rob Levine is the executive editor of Billboard magazine. He joins us this morning to talk about how lucrative a deal this whole thing is. Good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
What kind of money are we talking about, Rob?
I've seen some predictions that this will sell 5 million copies between now and the end of the year. Some of those copies go for $60. Some of them go for up to $250, depending on what edition of the game you buy. Rock Band as a franchise, as a business, the various editions together, has made well over $1 billion so far. Now, it'll probably make another billion just this calendar year.
Talk a little bit about the transaction and what took place. We're not just talking about publishing rights. We're talking about likenesses and photos and films and personal stories and all of that. I mean, that sounds like an expansive business model right there.
There's a story in the LA Times that says that MTV could pay the Beatles as much as $40 million. But that's only if that game hits certain benchmarks. And believe me, if this game hits those benchmarks, everybody's going to be getting rich. One thing you see with the Beatles, they tend to pursue big deals that are expensive, but everyone tends to do well over a while. If you look at the Love Show in Las Vegas, the partnership between the Beatles and Cirque du Soleil, that was very expensive, roughly sort of similar. But look at that show now. It's been going for a few years already. I was in Vegas a few months ago, and it was sold out on the early show on a weeknight during a pretty bad recession. What you've seen is the deals tend to pay off. Same thing with the Across the Universe movie.
How does this game change the video game industry, Rob?
One of the things the video game business really wants to do is to sell consoles. So let's say I'm a big Beatles fan. I absolutely have to have this. I might go out, spend $300 on an Xbox or a PlayStation 3 and buy the Beatles game. Well, what's going to happen? I only have one game. I'm going to want a few other games. That's the real win for the video game business.
Rob Levine, the executive editor of Billboard magazine, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
And finally, the Plain English campaign came out today with its worst examples of mangled English. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown included in his budget comment, quote, total spending will continue to rise and it will be a 0% rise in 2013 and 14. Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld made the list with his known unknowns Pentagon news conference in 2002. And no stranger to English mangling, former U.S. President George W. Bush took top honors in the survey with this one from 5 years ago.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
No mangling or misunderestimating at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being here. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.